see that there was bias in favor of law enforcement. And other than that, may there be accountability for Kenneth Chamberlain Sr., and may there be accountability for all families impacted by police violence.
Well, again, our condolences. They are never too late, unfortunately. Kenneth Chamberlain Jr., son of Kenneth Chamberlain, shot dead by police in White Plains in New York in November of 2011. And Mayo Bartlett, attorney for the Chamberlain family. The city of White Plains, New York, has agreed to a $5 million settlement with the Chamberlain family, the largest settlement around police violence in White Plains ever. That does it for our show. To see our past interviews, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station.
Yes, indeed. This is your community connection, and we are KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. In Hood River, Oregon, it is 91.9, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath. And everywhere, it's www.kboo.fm. Good morning, Cecil. How are you doing?
I'm great, great. It's you know, it's time for school.
Oh,
time of year. Summer.
For some places, they've already gone back, you
that's
know.
Right. Yeah, that's what I say. It's school time. You know, summer is history.
No.
Out with the old,
no,
in with the new.
No, stop that.
Oh, okay.
No, it is not over until September 20th, something, 21st. Stop.
All right, okay.
And actually, for my mental health, my summer doesn't end until October 31st.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. That's a long story. Another time.
Okay. So when does it begin? But that's another story.
Sometime in May, I believe.
Okay, That's not too bad, May to October.
Yeah.
Well, it's somewhat like, you know, how they started to expand daylight saving time, because I think I remember years ago it wasn't as expansive as it is now.
Oh, so. Well, they've been playing with that experiment for years. I remember in the 70s, I think it was, when they actually had us going to school in the dark, mm-hmm. you know, because they wanted to prolong it. Yeah. But, you know, I'm glad we were able to hit this note on an optimistic tone, you know, this start the show this way, because while we're commemorating, you know, things from the past, and one of those is well, I'm going to say optimistic. The other is kind of, is not, you know, the other is not.
Well, I think it's all... As we'll express it, it is part of a long, ongoing tale
yes.
with things which are optimistic and things which are not, but it's a journey.
It's a journey as we seek to overcome.
Great. So if those of you who are listening this morning live, you heard Democracy Now! and Amy Goodman talk to people about the March on Washington, which was, 60 years ago. And I thought I would just share a little part from a speech. It's not the speech, but, well, it is the speech.
It is the speech.
The speech, but...
But it's a particular aspect of the speech.
And actually, this speech is one that was actually not heard of. This part was part of a negotiation, whether or not they should say it or not. And this is the part that was not permitted to say. And this is because those in control, and these were like, well, they were men, and they were older men, you know, middle-aged men, and they thought that this young rabble-rouser, you know, you had to calm down. And so they said, well, maybe not this part. The other part, yes. So young 23-year-old John Lewis did not include these words. They're talking about slow down and stop. Mm-hmm. We will not stop. All the forces of Eastland, Barnett, Wallace, and Thurman will not stop this revolution. If we do not get meaningful legislation out of this Congress, the time will come when we will not confine our marching to Washington. We'll march through the South, through the streets of Jackson, through the streets of Danville, through the streets of Cambridge, through the streets of Birmingham. But we will march with the spirit of love and with the spirit of dignity that we will have shown here today. By the force of our demands, our determination, and our numbers, we shall splinter the segregated South into 1,000 pieces and put them together in the image of God and democracy. We must say, wake up, America, wake up. For we cannot stop, and we will not stop, and cannot be patient. Again, we must say, wake up, America, wake up, for we cannot stop, we will not, and cannot be patient. John Lewis.
23 years old at the time.
Yeah, young.
Firebrand.
And you know, actually, he was a firebrand, but not as much of a firebrand as some of his comrades were, because right after this, he was the president of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And, you know, there was within the organization a movement to say, John Lewis, maybe not. and they pushed him over, and in his place they elected Stokely Carmichael. So at that time in 63, the movement was widening and shifting. And so you have the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee moving in a direction that was a little bit different than some of the, and I'm using these words deliberately, the elders did not want them to go to. So things were changing because people were just concerned about what should we do, what can we do.
Well, you know, I want to say something. Because there's two things I think are really important to reflect on for that, and I want to throw them out there just for people to chew on. You may or may not call for them. But one is in that article we shared, there was a woman speaking on how there was only one woman who was prominently allowed to speak at the event. Young woman, the woman who's telling the story was 8 years old at the time, and she says, look how many women there are now, you know, representing and speaking and presenting. The other thing I want to speak to is this understanding that there was no one area of leadership in the community. You had several contingents represented by their leaders, and these leaders got together. They didn't always agree as to what the preeminent points or missions of their gathering and of the march, but they agreed on the basics, and they stuck to that. And too often you hear marginalized minority communities being spoken of as if there is one, you know, one single point, you know, of leadership. And I think that's something that's really important, but you don't really hear it addressed as often as it should be.
Right. And that's a very excellent point in talking about the multiplicity of people in leadership. And we often hear about, and I know I'm going to get it wrong, I think the big six in terms of the leaders of the civil rights movement, and they often left out Mrs. Haidt, who was the leader of the National Coalition for Negro Women, which was a major organization which mobilized people throughout the nations, women,
yes,
in particular, in terms of making this possible. But of the big six, so you have people like Randolph and Rustin and King and the head of
Lewis
and the head
and
of
Cole Carmichael.
Yeah, the head of the NAACP, the head of the Urban League, and they probably in smoke-filled room. So, but they were seen as the leaders. But the a point that I think I was hearing from you, Celeste, was that there were multiplicity of leaders and
yes.
movements, and so that to pin it all on one movement, one person, one organization is to not give an accurate description and an accurate recollection of what happened, and in terms of mobilizing what we can learn from those who participated in the movement. And one of the things we wanted to expand our discussion this morning was talking about not only about the 60th anniversary of the march on Washington, and the theme was not a commemoration but a continuation. So
yes.
question for us is, where are we, what have we learned, and where are we going? What can different generations of activists learn from one another? Franz Fanon, the psychiatrist, political philosopher, who was prominent in the 1960s, he once wrote that each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. So then, for this generation, what is its mission? What can this generation learn from the civil rights movement? From the time of the uprisings in its past 10, 15 years, we've often heard the phrase, and this is in relation to the Black Lives Movement and other actions that have taken place, the phrase, this ain't your daddy's civil rights movement.
Yeah.
So if it isn't...
Well, whose is it?
And what
and
is,
what's it doing?
And what's it doing?
You know, I have a segue to the other two points that you had mentioned. Here's an interesting take on this with respect to the multiplicity of political presentations within the Black community, you know, because when not monolithic, you know, we have many different aspects of what it means to be Black in America. In the Civil Rights March, although it's often painted as though it was a monolithic, single political presentation, there were a lot of people who had different views. I mean, you know, from whether or not you're going to participate in the Democratic Party to whether you're going to be a socialist or communist to whether you are, you know, pro-agrarian or pro-urban, just a lot. Okay, so now to get to my point, there is a single person out of the 18 cronies of Trump who is still in prison.
Wait. So they've in Georgia, right?
Yeah.
There's this, the district attorney.
Uh-huh.
So there's this indictment of 18 conspirators, right?
Right.
And you saying, and what are you saying? There's one person, what?
Yeah. So Harrison Floyd is the man's name. Now, some people are thinking, how come the black man is still in jail? Not okay.
Well, you know, and people you like know. the former mayor of New York, his bail was what, $100,000. The president of the United States was $200,000.
Former president.
Oh yes, let me get it right. $200,000, and you're saying. And you're saying that the brother man is cannot get out of jail?
Wait a minute. I'm gonna have to give you some pushback here.
Okay.
All skin folk and kin folk.
Well, okay.
Okay. So here's the rub. You know, civil rights gave him the opportunity to express his political perspectives with some measure of impunity, okay? But dude is still in jail. So I read the article and I did a little bit more reading. And the one you said, I believe, is the one that was in Forbes, Forbes magazine. The author was Brian Bouchard, B-U-S-H-A-R-D. And it was published on the 25th. Trump co-defendant Harrison Floyd denied bond. Here's why he's still in jail. Now, I read that, and I mean, I had to stifle some chortles. Yeah, chortles. Just outright chortles, not chuckles. Because it's like, well, that's he get, you know. But, you know, but then you got to think, well, okay, he has the right to have a differing political perspective, even one that's not popular, even one that's contrary to his well-being. I don't know. I'm assuming. Okay. But here's the thing. You know, I want to separate that because to assume that he's being kept in as a function of his blackness, I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case because he had been served some subpoenas and he threatened people. He threatened to shoot the people who served them.
Okay. But I'm going to defend Brother Man here.
Well, he has that right because we now have that civil right opportunity.
So this one who blacks for Trump. You know this.
Yeah.
This guy and you know he's a vet and
a Marine veteran. Yeah.
And educated.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a degree. But
has run for office. Mm-hmm.
But he's the only person of the 18 that they are most afraid of. You know, Trump can go on his plane and go to who knows where on his jet. And Brother Man probably doesn't have, well, I just think just be careful with who you ally yourself with.
Because
they left Brother Man in jail and they're out and you know, drinking champagne with and Brother Man still
probably
in jail.
Not even champagne, probably something much more esoteric they're drinking. Oh, they're drinking freedom. After a fashion. Well, you know, I read this and one thing is he couldn't afford an attorney.
You know.
And so I don't know why there hasn't been one provided for him. And he says he's not a flight risk because he said he voluntarily surrendered.
Oh, maybe he can sell his mugshot because, you know, the former president made, what, I think $7 million in a few hours?
Well, at least it was pledged. I don't know how much he actually made, but, he, okay. you know, but I hope people will rethink that and don't. You already pushed send, just push renege. Anyway, let's get the phone numbers and then finish developing the conversation. The phone number is 503-231-8187 to join in the conversation.
And before we go to our caller, I just also want to remind our listeners that this is a conversation that we desire to have your impact on and in your reflections. Just to conclude, a few things I have to say is you know, this October 27th, October 28th, is really significant for many reasons. And among those is that the date of the March on Washington in 1963, that date was set August 28th because it was the anniversary of the lynching of Emmett Till
yes.
in 1955, August 28, 1955. Also related, as the hundreds of thousands were gathering in Washington and in Washington on that day on August 28, 1963, news of the death of a patriarch of the human rights movement first half of the 20th century. News of the death of W.E.B. Du Bois came. Dr. Du Bois died in Accra, Ghana on August 27th, 1963 at the age of 95. And Dr. Du Bois was a monumental figure in the human rights movement. Who was born in 1868, 5 years after the end of the Civil War in Massachusetts. He was the first person of African descent to earn a PhD from Harvard University. He went on to become a founder of the NAACP, was instrumental in writing throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. He became a thinker and influencer not only in the United States but throughout the world. And his life ended in Ghana at the age of 95. Dr. Du Bois was a thinker, a Pan-Africanist, and someone who influenced the movement. So August 27th, August 28th is significant. And then we have, as the marchers this year gathered in Washington, D.C., came the news of another racist attack, and this time on Saturday in Jacksonville, Florida, where this individual went first to a predominantly black university and was not able to do harm there. He went to a store in a predominantly black neighborhood and then executed three individuals.
For me, well, first let me say this. I can't call it an execution. It's just murder. You know, generally, not always, but generally execution is considered some type of punishment mm-hmm. or a retaliatory move coming out of some intense rivalry or contest. Okay. This was just plain murder, mm-hmm. you know. And then I'm not going to read about that. I saw the article and I had to push back for my own mental health. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, when I saw what had happened and had seen a little piece of the news, I wouldn't even look at it or listen to it because it's just more than I could handle. I called up my friend who lives in Jacksonville and who told me I was, you know, doing some community service in the area, and I heard about it, and everybody was, you know, trying to hunker down and make sure they were safe because there was no idea what was going on, you know. And for people who, for whom that is more than they can handle, you have my empathy, you know. I'm right there with you.
So let us remember it and say their name of those who were killed in this senseless racist attack, lynching. Angela Michelle Carr, Anolt Joseph, known as A.J. Laguerre Jr., and Gerald Galleon.
Thank you for that, Cecil. And for helping us at least remember the possibility that their light provided, you know, and for helping us find some way of making sense of this assault. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 503-231-8187. And we need to get to our patient callers. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning. I didn't hear the other two points that that Cecil had brought up, so I'm just speaking to the one that I heard that kind of stood out to me, where you were talking about, like, you know, well, you know, because Franz Fanon was talking about, like, you know, basically that, you know, that the new, that every generation has to dig deep and find their purpose or their mission. That's not exactly the quote, obviously, but you know, I think really what it comes down to, at least what I see in this generation, is that we need to reclaim the vocabulary of class warfare. And I think we also need to clearly more understand what violence is. I think when we talk about revolution, you know, because of the way the system is, you know, a lot of liberal folks, even well-meaning progressive folks, will always jump straight to the violence. But, you know, I think that a lot of people miss that, like, you know, the idea of terror for black and brown folks being just around the corner is violence. I think the idea that people in the home of the free, and, you know, the land of the free and the home of the brave, can be sleeping in hallways and alleyways, and children can be starving, and that, you know, and that we can have people taking away housing, whether it's an actual house or a tent, on a whim because we decide we don't like somebody. I think that's violence. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and especially when we're talking about the anniversary of the March on Washington, you know, the way that it's been co-opted as this nonviolent thing, when, like you said, there was a lot of through lines for ways of believing. But I think one thing that we have to remember is that one outlook bared out over time, and that was the outlook of the socialists, you know, where Kwame Ture had, you know, he was speaking in his time, in King's time, in Malcolm X's time, saying that you know, you can't, you know, nonviolence only works if your oppressor has a conscience, and America has no conscience. And we're seeing the lasting effects of that now. and the idea that the civil rights movement simply stopped at just gaining a few meager concessions and didn't push all the way through because of liberal and conservative co-opting, you know, I think we need to remember that, you know, as we continue to push on and to reclaim that vocabulary and to reclaim the socialism and the communism of not only the Black Power movement, but also the Chicano Power movement and many other movements, the feminist movement, that vocabulary will come with pushback, and some of it will be verbal, some of it might be physical, but realizing, you know, as the preachers would say, we're in the last days, and it truly does feel like the last days, you know, with climate change and all that. But I mean, just realizing that, you know, that the only real hope we have is true resistance and true community, and we're not going to have any of those things if we can't look at our situation in truth and just lay bare, you know, what the real situation is. And I feel like that's, I mean, that might have been a little long-winded, but I feel like that's the goal for this generation, is to reclaim that vocabulary of class warfare and to reclaim the socialism and the communism that gave birth to the civil rights movement, to the feminist movement, and to remember that, you know, they don't want us to win, as well-meaning as they can be. Sometimes they really don't want us to win, so it's up to us as the people to push forward and to carry on that message.
Hey, thank you, Santiago, and thank you for reminding us of the necessity of listening to the people. And you mentioned the revolutionary, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael. But also, just hear these words from John Lewis. He said, "The revolution is at hand. We must free ourselves of the chains of political and economic slavery. We will not wait for the courts to act, for we have been waiting for hundreds of years. We will not wait for the president, the Justice Department, nor Congress, but we will take matters into our own hands and create a source of power outside of any national structure that could and would assure us a victory." That's John Lewis in 1963. Yeah,
that's right on. Yeah. I think remembering, too, that, you know, he talked about good trouble. You know, mm-hmm. good mm-hmm. trouble is still trouble.
There you go.
Well, it's trouble for someone.
It's trouble for someone, but it's still trouble.
True.
Be prepared to get into trouble.
Thank you so much, Santiago. Appreciate your thoughts and for calling this morning.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Join in the conversation, 503-231-8187. So, one of the things, I think when I hear people, well, okay, in all fairness to Santiago, yes, we do have to remember what some of our ideologies and political perspectives were that formed this march, and not assume that they were all based on capitalistic gains. However, I'm not so sure that necessarily claiming quote-unquote communistic or socialistic ground and definitions and ideologies and definitions or what we need. I'm thinking that if this truly is not my mom and my dad's or my grandmom and my granddad's, you know, protests, and it's mine, shouldn't we be creating something new? And, you know, because I mean, there are some countries that have different systems than ours. You know, it's not purely capitalistic, it's not purely communistic or socialistic, you know, socialism, let me say that. And I'm thinking those are generally a synthesis or an offshoot, if you will, of those fundamental ideologies. And I use the word fundamental to indicate that what I'm talking about now is an offshoot for what that used to be, if that makes sense. But I'm thinking, okay, if it's not their march and it's our march, can't we redesign it? Because I don't see any of these other systems necessarily working that well.
I think there are multiple things at play at the same time. One is mm-hmm. is looking at ideology, and that includes economic theories.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what are the options that we have to offer, and certainly, part of this isn't your grandparents' civil rights movement.
Shall I tease you and say, is that classism creeping up in there? Is exactly. that there some that there classist stuff?
which was quite evident in 1963, but that's another conversation.
Another conversation.
But and I did have a point.
I'm sorry, I derailed you. Mea culpa.
So there was a
well, you were talking about, you know, these original ideologies and how we refer to them.
Yeah, and a point is that, you know, in every generation there is a move to define and create for ourselves who it is we are and what we are fighting for. And so in addition to moving beyond just rhetoric and saying, well, we have a different battle, I think part of it is necessary to really understand what it was that those people were fighting for and how they struggle. Mm-hmm. And to dismiss it by offering a parody of a movement is not helpful. So I think it's important to look at the real struggles of what people went through and not to listen to this Hallmark's version of the civil rights movement. And so when you have rhetoric such as the John Lewis at the 1963 march, is evidence of, well, everyone wasn't in a kumbaya, let's all get along moment, and that in fact the struggle for human dignity and human freedom means clashing with the power system.
Okay.
And they also mm-hmm. mean struggle with those who are your allies in terms of defining how we should create a world that we can accept and live in. Those are some of the challenges we face, and that it's important to know our history in order to say, well, what can we do? What can we learn from it? And what maybe we can do differently to address the needs of our times? And people are, in fact, discovering and creating movements. And I think part of the challenge is the fact that generations do not talk among one another. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we will go to our next caller. Joan, good morning.
Good morning. I was I always have trouble resisting getting in on these wonderful conversations. I just wanted to make one point. I tend to be more or less socialist myself. However, there were a few things that the communists and the socialists of those days did not really include, except for maybe Emma Goldman. Mm. They did not include the feminist point of view, which is extremely important right now. And they also did not include the earth-based point of view, which is expressed by a lot of indigenous people right now. Both of those things I did not really see in communism or even in socialism that much. And that's new.
Yes.
And Ursula K. Le Guin had some very interesting ideas on technology, and she was thinking about utopia, not that there is such a thing as utopia, but what is a perfect society? You know, how can we have a better society? And she had some very interesting points to make. And I believe that the points of people like her were not heard by the communists or the socialists. Even though Mao Zedong wanted to liberate the women, he did not do it in what I would consider to be a feminist way, although he accomplished something. But generally, the violent revolutions lead to more violence and weirdness. And Sonia Johnson, who ran for president against Ronald Reagan, remember? She said that if women had designed cities and so on, they would be nothing like they are now. So we have to look at that. And there's a lot being said about agriculture and about plants and about, you know, what we need to do to save the planet. And it is all interconnected. So I wanted to make that point that going into the future, yeah, we've got to have something new. And we've got to have the courage to think about it in a new way. And I think a lot of people are. And we're going to disagree, no doubt about it. But we can't have this thing with open season on black people. It's not okay. And I, you know, that's, what can I say about that? The whole history of the 20th century was there, and it happened. And we have to consider all of that as we go into the future, assuming there is one. That's my comment.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm going to be optimistic and say, okay, there is a future. You know, and I don't know how to process this, this violence directed toward black folk. And I have my own theory, and my theory being those powers that do not wish to see a equitable, integrated society here in the U.S. are doing everything they can to force the temperament of black America as an aggregate to a point of violent retaliation. And so for that reason, you know, I struggle to keep my sanity, and I try to help others maintain theirs, because I will not give in to that. You know, but, you know, speak to your circle, speak to your family, speak to your tribe, speak to your friends, speak to your coworkers, and help them to realize how this attack on the lives of black people here in America is not the answer, you know, and help, you know, but only you can speak to those members of your family who are contemplating this. And I'm not saying that you have, you know, white supremacist people in your family. What I'm saying is, as a practice to all of our white allies, you know who those people are in your circles. You know, hold your enemies close and talk to them and dissuade them. It can be done, because there is a black man, I can't remember his name right now, who is world famous for talking former Klans people out of their ideologies. So it can be done. But
it has to be reaching beyond my family and my bubble. I know where my bubble stands. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get beyond your bubble. Mm-hmm. And that's where it is. We're all going to have to do that.
Well, that's called building some bridges, because that's what we're all trying to do. And that was one of the points I brought up at the beginning, you know, when we were discussing the anniversary of the march. Not every black person who came to that march had the exact same idea of what rights they wanted, you know. And so we build our bridges. That's a strength.
Yeah, and part of the strength is that we have diversity, and therefore we will disagree. We're not all marching in lockstep, and true, that's good. Mm-hmm. I just want to mention what Sonia Johnson said, which is that the end does not justify the means. The end is the means. The end is the means are the end. You know, the way you do it is what you get. So we're going to have to, you know, it's a consciousness thing, and it is the spiritual thing, and that's, but it doesn't necessarily mean a cliched idea of what spirituality is.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, people are afraid of black people. I think that's what it is.
Well, maybe people should address that. Why?
And then
have a reckoning with what comes up. That maybe that's one of those questions that needs to be asked, you know, because that's one thing you can do is when you encounter it, is like, why are you afraid of black people? And then listen. Yeah. Well, thank you for your call. Yeah.
I needed to say that. Thank you for allowing me to. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you, Cecil and Celeste, for a very empowering discussion. I wanted to bring three quotations, three people that might be called socialists. Maybe you can comment on the quotations. The first is from Steve Biko, who said, black is not a pigmentation of the skin, but a new consciousness. Mm-hmm. That's a very exciting perspective. The second one is from William O. Douglas, the longest-serving justice on the Supreme Court, who said that the establishment is like George III. And when the system becomes impossible, we have a right to revolution. He said this in his book. I'm kind of looking forward to studying that book, but he really represents what the Supreme Court should be and what an activist Supreme Court justice could be. The third quotation is from Orson Welles, who said that a map without utopia is not worth looking at. I think that's utopia needs to be our guiding light, a way of kind of synthesizing the universal and the particular.
Right.
Okay, and this is another block tradition, just like the prophetic tradition. So we just have to deal with that in our anything goes society.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's quite a array of individuals. You mentioned Steve Biko, who was an activist in the Black Consciousness Movement in the 1980s in South Africa, who was killed, and his death stirred up another round of Black activism among youth in South Africa. Orson Welles and I forgot
Justice Douglas.
And Justice Douglas, which is it's just a reminder of what one Supreme Court nomination can make a difference. FDR nominated Mr. Douglas to the Supreme Court. He was on there for 4 decades and was an advocate for lots of things that progressives like, and environmentalism as well. But also it's a reminder that, you know, people can sit on the Supreme Court and have influence for a long time. So former President Donald John Trump.
He did what their blueprint.
Three of them.
Yes.
And they are with the three others are going to control things for a very long time.
Well, we'll see.
Let's go to.
I'm not advocating anything. I'm just seeing what Providence is going to allow. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I agree with what you just said, Celeste. We have to believe and don't let hope die, because that's what we have right now. I was 15 years old when the march happened in D.C., and I vaguely remember that. But I do remember 5 years later, with my naive self thinking that the Civil Rights Bill meant something, witnessing my African-American husband be sentenced to prison, railroaded to prison, and realizing that nothing had really changed, and it has not changed. Keith Notis was executed by Portland police members of the Portland Police Department 10 years ago, mm-hmm. that this stuff is continuing to happen. And I heard that DeSantis was booed when he went to a vigil for the people who were killed.
Yes, I read that too.
Mm-hmm. And I feel, to me, it was audacious of him to even go there.
I felt that same anger, yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, he and certain other people in the political arena who are not, don't represent the people who are in love with them, are provocateurs, mm-hmm. and they are setting the stage for young mentally ill people to do what that young man did in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. and they are guilty,
mm-hmm.
yes.
and continue to be guilty and will remain guilty in my mind until they change. And I am really, really, really tired of pretenders, mm-hmm. who deny their base ignorance, or actually their ignorance is causing them to be racist. But they deny it, and they pretend like they're something else, and they're doing something else, but continually in denial.
Yes.
And I just got a call from a friend of mine. He's turned 80 this summer, and he was good friends with my husband, who has passed, and I was friends with his wife. He kind of chuckled, and he said, "We thought we were doing something, huh?" In the
70s.
Mm. I said, yeah, we did. But hey, here it is.
Don't discount that. Do not. Because every inch forward gets us to where we're going.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yes. And I understand that, and I agree with you. However, when I see things that are continuing to happen, and not just by mentally ill young people, but like, for example, members of the Portland Police Department, and somehow it is allowed,
yes,
and permitted, and the stage is set for that kind of stuff to continue. I want to know, what did we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say this. This is one thing that we did do. We managed some way to wrest a place at the table where, even if it's performative in terms of receiving our upset, we have a place to go and express that upset without being just automatically jailed, where it's understood you have no right. At least we have that. It may not be a lot all the time, but sometimes it is a lot, and it's just what's needed.
I think it's very ironic that you mentioned this, that is it Harrison Floyd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the only person among all those people that is still incarcerated. And
well,
it has been my observation throughout the years that the so-called due process in our criminal justice system has never, ever, ever been equal.
That's for sure.
Well, that is the one thing that I might draw out of this, but I have a weird feeling about this, because the fact that he threatened FBI agents.
You know, I don't.
You know.
There's an injustice.
Trump
threatens
them every day.
Yes, I know. But Trump is smart. And you know what he does? Trump may wag his finger, but he doesn't wag it directly in the face and tell somebody, "I would have killed you."
Well, white,
he sends other people, the stupid people, to do that work.
White privilege.
White, okay, yes, okay. Please. I'm still on the fence about how I'm going to respond to brother, though.
Brother man.
Yeah.
He needs our prayers and thoughts.
Okay, yes. There we go.
Thank you,
Francis.
All right. You guys, peace.
Take care. Thank you so much for your thoughts. And let's go to Harry.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call. Two questions. First is the case against Trump and the gentleman that's still in the Folsom County Jail.
Harry.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think he did that because of fear of retaliation or being killed. You have to remember, considering what he did and what is he responsible for, I mean, this is one of the major cases that they're going. And also, there's a good possibility that Kanye West and
I lost you.
I lost you too.
Oh, you did? Okay. Why he's still in the Folsom County Jail is because for his own protection. Who's going to protect him? If he went out there, what was the first thing that's going to happen? He's going to get killed.
So he...
By who, I'm not understanding how you come to that conclusion. So, help us understand.
Let's see. Look what he's being indicted for.
I'm just asking...
I'm
asking you a question. Are you saying that he's in jail because he wants to be in jail for his protection?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. And think about this.
Trump
is a billionaire.
It
would cost, if the bail is $200,000 times 18, if he paid everybody's bail to get out, it's only $3.6 million. And so I'm kind of thinking, why didn't he, how come he's still there? How come he didn't pay everyone's bail? In fact, right now,
he hasn't paid his bail with Rudy Giuliani, so why would he pay somebody's bail?
Exactly.
He didn't even buy Giuliani. Folks food at this, you know, place he was at. No.
Please, he's a drifter, please.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, you lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas. As Harrison, what was he thinking?
And Kanye, there's a good possibility that Kanye West and Kim Kardashian will be in that trial, because exactly when this came out, what they did to these Georgia polling employees, well, the minute that happened, that's when Kim Kardashian filed for divorce from Kanye West.
Well, now we don't have enough time to entertain that. That would be an interesting rabbit hole to tumble down. We'll have to save that one for later.
Okay, I have one more thing.
Well, no, we have another caller, and it's 8:55, so we have to let you go. But thank you.
Now the
secret to getting more time is call early.
That's right.
Yeah. David is our next caller. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, good morning. I'm kind of glad I'm last, because I'm going to say the line that King said, not at the I Had a Dream, but another speech. And I think it actually kind of is a big reason of why we're actually having a lot of problems. And that is that the United States is the biggest purveyor of violence in the world.
Mm.
And I think that was what got him in more trouble than anything, of course. And a lot of people today just refuse to even think about that, you know, what he said. Do you agree with me?
I think that was a problematic line for 1960s white consciousness to hear. I don't know if that's the one line that got him in the most trouble, but I do agree United States is number one. Now, I'm not saying that violence of this nature belongs exclusively to Americans, because, you know, truth be told, Europe back in the Middle Ages sent people all over the world. It's like, we can't oppress our own people anymore.
We're sending it out.
I'm agreeing. I'm just saying.
Military bases are not handed out candy to children and stuff.
Yeah, so. I agree. I was just saying we don't have the ground rights, you know, on that. But yes, most definitely, that's what we do.
And I don't think Putin has any bases in South America or Africa. So.
Well, he's got some agreements in Africa, but let's, you know,
right, exactly.
You know, but we don't know for sure yet what he has.
Well, I'm just saying that is okay, but thanks for taking my call.
Okay, you're welcome. I agree that that was not a statement that endeared folks, but that was why people got scared and tried to keep John Lewis out, even though he said the same thing.
Well, a prophet is not without honor, except in their own country. And so prophets are often not welcome.
Not welcome, scourged, and vilified.
Well, continue to listen. Don't get scourged or vilified, but if you're doing the right thing, get in good trouble.
Yes, good trouble. And a form of good trouble is supporting your community connection, KBOO Portland. Go to www.kboo.fm. Not only listen, but click and financially support us, please. Thank you for everyone who called and everyone who supports. More talk radio on your community connection, KBOO, and stay tuned for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, or KBOO.fm, where we make musical structures for the listener.
You can
to
follow
enjoy.
KBOO on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBOO on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation.